Welcome back to episode 5, part 2. Thank you guys again for listening. If you haven't listened to part 1 yet, I encourage you to pause this, head on back and download part 1 of episode 5. That way you can hear the whole conversation as it flows. It really was recorded all in one night, and we just split it up for the sake of time and for our schedules. We didn't have time to record episode 6 quite yet. So that will be coming hopefully next week. That's our plan. But for right now, enjoy the second half of our conversation. We're going to talk about games coming out in February, which ones that we are personally most hyped about, as well as open world games and how they can possibly negatively impact some of these big story games. So I'll be interested to hear your feedback on that conversation, and I hope you enjoy. Take care, you guys.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things
here. I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
All right, so here's what I want to do. I want to make sure that Derek and I get a chance to tell you guys, the listeners, some games that are coming out that you should care about. You don't have a choice. You need to care about these games. These are games that are coming out this month. To me,
what if I don't even care about them?
You have to pretend. Come on, man. Oh, okay. We're on the same team. Come on.
No.
Been trying
to trade you for a while.
The month of February, for me personally, much more exciting month than I'm used to for a normal February.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, you know, I actually own the two major consoles that are out. The two main competing consoles, at least, PS4 and Xbox One, and the 3DS is getting some major love. So
I am really
excited about the games that are dropping this particular month. So what I want to do is just go through some of the heavy hitters. If there's anything missing from the list, Derek, I don't know if you've got that in-depth calendar you had last time. I'll go through these heavy hitters. I'll just mention them. Feel free to interrupt me if you want to talk about one in particular, or if there's one that I skip and you want to go back and cover one that I skip.
Okay.
So here's some games in February you're going to want to make sure you pay attention to. Last week, Gravity Rush Remastered dropped on the PS4. I never played that on the Vita, but I've heard that it's a pretty fun game. I've heard it's a good-looking game. I've heard a few good things about the PS4 version. It's not for everybody, but I don't know enough about it to really speak to it. But that is out. It's available. PS4 owners.
I played a little bit of it on the Vita.
Okay.
I won't say I hated it. It was a little weird. I'm not a big Vita fan, though, so it's
what
not
kind of
hard
game
for
is
me.
It? Is it a platformer?
Yeah, it's kind of like a platformer that, like, twists your screen. It's like, because, obviously, gravity is a part of it. It kind of twists your screen based off the platform you jump to.
And is that main gravity mechanic, that gameplay mechanic, is that fun? Like, they're pretty creative with it?
I literally played it for, like, 5 minutes.
So
for me, it was okay.
Okay.
But I will say I didn't walk away from the game going, I hate this game. Like, you know how I'll just say I hate a game.
Yep.
I didn't say that. So when I saw that this had been announced, a remaster version coming to the PS4, which I obviously prefer over the Vita, I was intrigued. I won't pay $30 for it, but I will either buy it when it's cheaper or let you buy it, depending on your interest level. But anyway, I'm going to try to play it. I'm just not going to play it now.
Okay. When you're listening to this, then a few days ago, XCOM 2 came out on the PC. Now, I am very disappointed this isn't on more platforms, but I did play XCOM 1 on my old PC, you know, when it was up and functioning. Love the XCOM games. I love that turn-based strategy. Just kind of that story, that setting, that sci-fi setting where you're fighting against the invading aliens. And I think in this case, now you're the rebels against the occupying aliens. So looks like a really great game. The reviews that are coming in are fantastic.
Yeah, it's like a 93, I think, on the Metacritic.
It's
maybe a 91.
It. Yeah, it's killing it. Yeah.
So I actually had no plans of getting it, not because I didn't like XCOM. I did kind of like it. It's just not, even though it's my style of game, I'm actually the opposite of you, Tim. I'm not really into the whole humans versus aliens thing, especially for a tactical game. I kind of like the JRP fantasy more, which we'll talk about a game that's kind of similar to it later. But when I saw the reviews and I watched videos, and I was just like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
I think I need to get this game, and I can get it for $35.
Yeah.
But I'm going to hold off, and we'll talk about why later.
I think it looks really great. I if I had a PC, I'd be getting it.
I will get it. It's just not right now.
I really enjoyed kind of that grid-based strategy RPG game that has ranged weapons. So I even played that one for the, I think it was a launch title with a 3DS. It was that Ghost Recon game.
Yeah.
Was it Shadow Ops or something like that? That game was really fun. I mean, it didn't get great reviews, but I thought it was a really fun game where you've got, it's all ranged strategy RPG type combat, and XCOM was kind of that same vibe, a much better game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I liked that. I'm looking forward to, at some point in the future, either on a console or on some PC that I don't yet own, playing XCOM 2. All right, on February 9th, this coming Tuesday, Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia will drop on the PS4, Vita, Xbox One, and PC. On that same day, they're going to release a trilogy pack of all three Assassin's Creed Chronicles games. So you'll get China, India, and Russia in a trilogy pack if you haven't picked up the other two just yet. I do like Assassin's Creed Chronicles China. Have not played India yet, although from everything I've seen and heard and read, very similar to that game, just with a slightly different aesthetic, and of course with a different story.
Yeah, I heard it was character. A little bit better than China. So since you like China more than me, you might actually like India.
Yep. So I'm definitely going to play India and Russia at some point. So I'm glad those games are dropping. There's just other games this month, though, that are going to get my gaming dollars and time. So another game coming out February 9th. By the way, February 9th, this coming Tuesday, loaded. Is a crazy day. So we've got the Assassin's Creed Chronicles trilogy pack. So they got the third game in that trilogy, as well as the entire trilogy available for you. By the way, if you're a Vita owner and you want those AC Chronicles games, the trilogy pack won't drop till April 5th. For some reason, the way they're rolling that out with the entire pack, I don't know why, but on Vita, that comes out April 5th. So you've got the Assassin's Creed Chronicles games. On that same day, you can pick up Dying Light: The Following for PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Love it.
We've talked about this already, but this looks like a massive, massive add-on to Dying Light. Almost like a sequel.
To me, it feels like Dying Light 2. I mean, the only reason why they can't say it's 2 is because it's the same game, just huger. But I...
Well said.
Yeah, huger. Thanks, Dave. larger. And I'm excited by it. I'm also a little nervous because of all the games that are releasing in February that I'm not going to get to play this as much. But if there's anybody out there who's a listener, Jesse, I'm calling to you, who wants to play this, I will be available on both the PS4 and Xbox One. And if I know other people are playing it, I know I'll play it. So it's definitely worth it.
I will say this, as cool as that looks, and we've hyped it up a little bit, that game, to me, personally, just screams of backlog. Like, it looks to me like a game that's like, ooh, I want to play that. It looks fun. Maybe I'll get to it this summer or something. Like, it looks like a game that I will get to, but not right away. I could get sucked in if enough peer pressure hits me and others are playing it.
Well, because it's a big game. So unless you get, it's a huger game.
It's a huger game, yeah.
So unless you get, sucked in with playing other people, yeah, it's going to cause issues.
Well, another game that's coming out on February 9th is not as huger. It's called Firewatch. Drops on the PS4 and PC that same day, February 9th.
It's highly more of a pooner game. Pooner? Huger.
That sounds like a horrible word. All right, so Firewatch is a highly anticipated game. A lot of people are looking forward to it. It definitely has that... walking simulator, discover the story, solve the mystery vibe to it.
Yeah.
I still don't know a ton about this game, and I don't want to. I want to go in a little bit uninformed, like I currently am, other than images and the trailers from E3.
Yeah, I watched.
I don't want to know much more.
I just watched the one trailer from E3. It had some real good dialogue in the trailer.
It did. It
had great voice acting. It has a... it's not 8-bit, so for an indie game, it's actually beautiful, or from what I can tell. So I was already intrigued, and then, I'm not going to spoil it or anything, but it was in the trailer. They kind of end on a, holy crap, what's going on type thing.
Yeah, like a cliffhanger.
Yeah, so when I saw that, I was like, sold. Like, charge whatever you want, I'm gonna buy it. So unless, and I am a person who does not put a lot of stock in reviews these days, because I don't trust... most of gaming media. I will check Firewatch Firewatch's reviews. I'll still probably buy it, but I'm hoping I don't get like another Vanishing of Ethan Carter type thing where I'm like, oh, I'm excited to see how this mystery plays out, but then kind of find out it's not something worth investing in.
Well, what about this next one that comes out the same day? We're still on February 9th, folks.
Yes.
The same day, Unravel.
I actually have that game and Xbox One right now.
And have you played it yet?
Yes, I have. I put in about 30 minutes and didn't get to play a lot because I had stuff to do. But it's really, really beautiful game. It's like a platformer, but it's a little bit of a thinking one right now. I'm just in the beginning, almost like the tutorial where it's just trying to tell you how to play. So there's a lot to it, but it seems simplistic at this point.
Okay.
I don't know if it's one of those games that's going to like gradually get harder. Kind of like Ori, you know, you level up your character, you unlock things. While you're doing that, you're actually complicating the game a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that would be what this is. But yeah, I like it so far. It's very, like, I think as soon as you see it, you'll see what I mean. But it's a gorgeous, gorgeous
Yeah, the videos
game.
Of it looked really pretty. It looks like the kind of game that I will definitely enjoy. So, looking forward to that one. And here's one that it's not usually a type of genre that I'm into, but I do like this franchise, and it's Street Fighter V. Comes to PS4, console exclusive, and the PC on February 16th. Street Fighter V. What's your hype? Give me 1 through 10, your hype level for Street Fighter V.
I'd say 7. I got it on PC, because it's half off on PC for me. So I wasn't willing to invest the full 60 and get it on the PS4, even though I have a PC, I do prefer to play on PS4/Xbox One. I'm more of a console gamer.
Yeah, but
so
the games are so much cheaper on PC, so exactly. I don't blame you at all. Yeah.
So if I buy something on PC, it's because it's cheaper, but also it's just something that I'm not crazy for. Because if they were to announce, and I'm just obviously a scenario here, if they were to announce that Quantum Break was coming out on PC and Xbox One the same day, I would still buy it on the Xbox One first. Because I'm not a good enough PC gamer that I trust that I know how to set everything up correctly.
I got you.
So there are still games sometimes. I take a risk every time I buy a PC game because I'm like, is it going to work? Is it going to break? Is my controller going to work right? Whereas I don't have to worry about that on the Xbox One or the PS4. If I pre-order a game and buy it, I'm like, it's going to work. That being said, I've only had 2 issues with the 100-plus PC games I own, so it's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
But yeah, it's about a 7. I'm excited, but I'm not crazy. The next game we're going to talk about, I'm crazy for.
Okay, so on February 19th, I believe that's a Friday, Fire Emblem yes. Fates, Birthright and Conquest come to the 3DS platform.
11 out of 10.
I'm very excited for that too. I just pre-ordered the combo pack from, and the special edition is all sold out. We talked about that, I think, 2 weeks ago. We talked about how GameStop has stopped selling those pre-orders for special edition. Every retailer is all sold out of the special edition, which included both games on one cartridge and the future DLC. Bummer. I missed out on that.
I didn't know when I bought it. Like, I bought the special edition because it was $80 at GameStop. And by the way, Chris Haar, I've got the special edition. I'm so excited. I doubt he'll listen. But I got the special edition because I was like, okay, it's $80. It comes with both the games and the DLC. And that's pretty much what I would... That is what I would pay for it if I bought them separate. Because if you go to the store and you buy one game for $40, you can download the second one for $20, so that's $60, and then you can get the DLC when it comes out for another $20. So that's $80. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right. Kinda,
that's what I did. That's
yeah, so I was like, okay, I can get it for $80. It was unfortunately sold out at Best Buy, because that's where I would have wanted to buy it, because you would get 20% off that $80, so it would have only been $64. So instead I had to buy it from GameStop for $80. But it comes with some extra goodies. I actually watched a opening of the special edition today. because I wanted to see how everything looks. I didn't know too many details about it. I didn't do a lot of research. I just quickly pre-ordered it before it sold out. But then I saw that the game comes in one case, and it's pretty cool because the front is the white cover, which is the, I believe, the Eastern faction.
It's Birthright.
Yes. And then the backside is, for European players, would be what they would call the black, or Japan too, black cover, which is the Western faction.
Yep, Conquest.
Conquest. And so it's all in one package, and then when you open it up and you pull out the cartridge is also split in half. So it's one cartridge, but it has both covers on that one cartridge, like, split in half.
So I like
both
that.
So both games are on the cartridge, so that's a huge selling point for me because I didn't want to download anything on my 3DS because I still have, like, a 4GB or an 8GB memory in there. I don't have it upgraded. I know it's not that expensive to upgrade, but I don't care to.
Yeah, mine's way upgraded from there, yeah.
Oh, did you get, like, a 32?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't do that. So I didn't really want to, and so to be able to get this all on disc and not have to download it onto my 3DS is a big selling point for me. And then apparently they said Revelations is on the cartridge, but I can't play it. I don't know
how
it works.
Cool. And Revelations is the DLC that's coming a month or two later. Yeah.
So, but I actually get that 3 weeks early as well. So I get access to it 3 weeks early. I don't know the special edition or just if you've bought both of the games, but
very cool.
Very excited. 11 out of 10. It's my February game of the month. Even without playing it, it's the one I want the most. So I think it will be the game I enjoy the most.
All right, well, 4 days after Fire Emblem Fates, the great Fire Emblem Fates drops, comes a game that I'm very excited about called Far Cry Primal. For the PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Okay, can we
comes out on February 23rd.
Can we talk about this game for a little bit, though? All right, go ahead and do your intro. I apologize for cutting you off, but I want to talk about this game for a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, so Far Cry Primal is a standalone Far Cry game. It is not a DLC pack for Far Cry 4, although it is being talked about like it is. Far Cry 4 came out a year and 4 months ago. Came out a while ago. This is a brand new experience. They are not at all connected other than the fact that they are Far Cry games. It is a Far Cry game set in the prehistoric era, and it looks very brutal. It looks like a dangerous environment. There's a lot of animals and hunting involved. It looks like even a Beastmaster-type mode you can take, where you are then controlling these animals. Depending on, you know, your skill level, you can train, capture and train certain animals to join you. And it just looks so good. And by good, I don't necessarily mean, like, I know it's going to be a good game. But there's not many games in this setting. So I'm very excited to give it a try. So what is it that you, what have you noticed about it? What's got your attention about it? Or maybe what's making you skeptical about it?
All right, I'm not really skeptical. I am interested in seeing how this game plays out. But I have been noticing a couple complaints or concerns from the internet world about this game. First one was the one that you hit on in your intro, is that a lot of people are seeing Far Cry Primal for some reason as almost like a Far Cry Blood Dragon, which was like a six-hour DLC. It was standalone.
It was a spin-off from Far Cry
3. Yeah, it was a spin-off from Far Cry 3, but it was real small. It was goofy. It was okay.
It was hilarious. Have you guys?
It was hilarious. It was hilarious.
It was so funny.
But it was like okay as far as I didn't really enjoy playing it that much.
Okay.
But it was a smaller title is what I'm trying to get at. So a lot of people are saying, well, that's what Far Cry Primal is, because it's only coming out like a year and 3 months after Far Cry 4, which is pretty soon. That's a pretty quick release. I know Call of Duties and all that stuff like that come out yearly, but for a Far Cry game, they usually, I think, take a couple of years to release one. So this one's coming out quicker. And the other concern was releasing, I believe on the internet today, was a review from a tester. Apparently. Again, this can be completely fabricated. It can be completely made up. It also could be completely legit. And the tester, the said tester, basically kind of crapped on the game. They said that the game was fun, but the story was BS. That they felt like the game was just basically Ubisoft just trying to get a quick buck, that it didn't feel like a full game. So it was almost, he was playing in, whoever wrote this was playing into some of the concerns on the internet, and that this was just a small title that they were trying to make a quick buck off. And instead of charging you $20 for it, they're going to charge you $60 for it. I don't know if I trust this, obviously, because I don't know who it is. Plus, they're all, if you're a tester, you're not supposed to be talking about these games, so it's kind of shady that the person would do this in the first place. Also, they're not playing an actual final build, so maybe things were held back from the certain testers. I don't know. But the first thing I want to mention is stories for Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 4 were not what I would consider amazing. Far Cry games have never been known for their story. What I will say that's always intrigued me about Far Cry games that I have not seen for Primal is characters. Villains, protagonists are usually more interesting than the story. Vaz in Far Cry 3 is way more interesting than anything that happens in Far Cry 3. Who's the villain in Far Cry 4? I forget his name.
Pagan Min.
Pagan Min is extremely interesting. He's kind of absent in Far Cry 4 compared to...
Yeah, he's not in it enough. They call you every once in a while.
But it was like, you kind of wish you dealt with him more.
When he is there, though, I will say, he chews up each scene. Like, and I mean in a great way. Like, absolutely. He's great.
And so, and that's how Vaz was, but Vaz was there more. You didn't play Far Cry 3, did you?
Nope.
You really
should. I have it on my Steam library, and it never ran well on my old PC, so I never got to play it.
Well, hopefully you'll get a decent PC soon. I would suggest at least playing a little bit of it just so you can experience Vaz, but he's really good. He's intriguing. So anyways, I haven't seen that with Primal, so I'm not really worried about whether a story's crap or not, and the person that was doing the review, I'm not doing it here on the podcast, they really went into detail on the story, like nothing major spoilers, but if it comes out that it plays out the way that they said, you will know whether they were lying or not.
Here's my reaction to that, you know, little early review. A couple things. Number one, you got to consider the source.
Yeah.
And I don't even mean that to say that he's lying. Maybe it's a legit tester who has actually played this game. But at what point do we actually want to take that person's opinion?
Exactly.
And give it any kind of value, even if he's saying the things he's saying, or she saying the things she's saying.
Reality is, we don't always agree with everybody, so one person might say Far Cry Primal is the worst game ever, and I might walk away from it saying it's game of the year. I mean, that's just the reality of the
situation. Well, and also, for me personally, and I think for most people that are paying any kind of attention, I wouldn't necessarily expect this to be everything that Far Cry 4 was, even though, yes, it's a $60 game, it's a full price game. Far Cry 4 was one of their mainline entries. It's a numbered entry in a major game series. Mm-hmm. And this is, for all intent and purposes, a spinoff. You know, it's Far Cry Primal. I don't imagine that they would make Far Cry Primal 2 unless this is some kind of a blockbuster success. This is going to be a one-off, kind of like Blood Dragon was. Now, if it's anywhere close to the size of Blood Dragon in terms of the game length or how big the game is, that's going to be a disaster. But I don't think it is. I think most reports that are coming in are that it is a full-fledged Far Cry game. So in terms of story or characters, for some reason, as I'm looking at this game and I'm looking forward to playing it, I'm not all that concerned with it matching up with some of the more modern day ones. I just want a really believable, really gritty, really rough prehistoric world to explore, to hunt, to, you know, build my power and build up my little village and get things set up. I'm excited for that. I have not once thought, I wonder what the story is. Will I care about the main character? You know, will the villain be cool? And I usually do think about those things. But for this game in particular, they've got my imagination captured with the setting so far and some of the mechanics they've introduced just through previews. I am very excited about this game, even if it turns out that the story is a... Let's say if you were just to grade the story, if it comes out as a 5 or a 6, that's not going to bother me as long as they deliver on these other parts of the game.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about it. I think it will be a good game. I think, like I said, this is one person's opinion. Even if it's not fabricated, it's not that big of a deal. I've disagreed with plenty of people. I'm not, even though I realize I complain about a good amount of games on here, I generally like most games. And so I don't see me disliking this game because I like almost every Far Cry game I play.
Well, I don't know if you like most games or not. I don't think I believe you, but...
I do.
Okay. Plants...
I do.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 comes for...
See, I like Plants vs. Zombies.
Plants comes out for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC on February 23rd. Same day as Far Cry Primal. So one is a incredibly brutal, what looks to be one of the most violent Far Cry games. And the other one is a very family-friendly plants and cartoon zombies fighting. Did you play the beta for this one?
Sorry, my my TV cut out, so I missed anything you just said.
Okay, well, I just insulted you and your entire family, so I hope you're okay with it.
It's no big deal, because when Eli listens to this recording, he'll have no issues at all.
Oh, man, Eli. He instills fear into my heart. You know,
I gotta say, he did it again. He's like, I'm in the car with him, taking him home from basketball tonight, which, by the way, he scored 5 points, which is pretty awesome.
Yes.
But it's really good. That's because amazing. I think the whole team scored a total of 16, so he had almost a third of their points.
That's impressive.
We're in the car, we're driving home, and he's like, Dad, did you apologize to Tim, and what did he say? And I was like, yeah, I told Tim about your apology, and he said it's fine. And I said it in like a sad, like, are we seriously talking about this still? Like, he will not let this go until he has a conversation with you, Tim. Stop avoiding my son. Do you understand? He needs to talk to you.
I hear you. All right, Eli. Come on, man. Let's chat about it. Go wake him up.
Maybe he'll be on episode 6 or something like that.
Maybe, yeah. Let's do that. That'd be so funny if we got him on here. That would be absolutely hilarious.
All right, so for some reason, and I told you I was having TV problems like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
My TV keeps going in and out. It just went out, and your voice shut off completely, so I had no idea what you just said.
I didn't say anything. You're good.
Okay, good.
All right, so you already kind of gave this away. What is the one game this month that you are most excited about for you personally that's coming out in February?
Probably Broforce. Probably Broforce.
All right. Yeah.
No. It's gotta be Fire Emblem. Which is weird because I'm not a big handheld person. So to say with all these great games, like Street Fighter V is gonna be a great game. I know it's gonna be a great game. I believe Far Cry Primal is gonna be a great game. With all these great and The Following is gonna be amazing and huger. Amazing.
It's going to be huger than huger.
It's going to be hugely huger, hugely amazing.
Mm. Yeah. now I'm hyped.
Amazing. That's awesome. So.
And it falls apart.
Wow. We should just cut it now. But I'm really shocked that this is the game that out of all the games that I cannot wait to play. I really liked Fire Emblem Awakening. And this one actually sounds even cooler.
It does.
Than Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it's going to have triple the content that Fire Emblem Awakening had. Because I believe each cartridge that we talked about, we told you there's two cartridges, two games, Conquest, and what was the first one?
Birthright.
Birthright. Has their own game that's the size of Awakening, if I'm correct. I believe that's crazy.
I mean, even if they all added up to the size of Awakening, I'd be happy.
Exactly. But it's apparently both cartridges each have the same amount of content that Awakening had.
There you go. Then
on top of that, you have Revelations coming out like a month or two later.
Yeah, I think it's in March, but I'm not positive on that.
I'm pretty sure it's in March. And then, like I said, you and I, because we bought both copies, we're gonna get I believe we get it 3 weeks early.
That's awesome.
I don't think that's just for special
for me
edition.
I wish I could make this more exciting and pick something different, but that's actually my most anticipated game this month too. But I will say it is a very close race for me personally between Fire Emblem Fates and Far Cry Primal. They're two very different games on two totally different systems, so I will be playing both extensively, I would imagine, in the second half of this month. I'm really pumped for both. They're two games that I've been looking at for some time now as we've gotten closer to their release. So really, really excited for both of those. And yeah, and there's a few others here that I think could surprise me. So anything from Firewatch or Unravel?
I was going to say, Firewatch I would put, for me personally, in front of Far Cry Primal.
Yeah.
So if I had to like rank them, I would say Fire Emblem, Firewatch, probably Far Cry, and then Dying Light the following.
Okay, yeah. And you know what? Who knows? I mean, as happens many, many times, there's sometimes a game that you're not expecting to hook you that will just come out of nowhere and completely hook you. So,
Will it unravel your expectations?
Yeah. Yes, it will. You wizard.
That was a great joke, wasn't it?
You wizard with the words.
All right, let's get to 2 hours into our podcast, our main topic.
Our main topic, that's right. That's right. No, this is a good, I like this. You brought this up last week, and I think it's something worth discussing. And I kind of want to let, since it was a thought that you had, I want to let you dig in a little bit to the thought behind this, and then maybe some examples. So what we're going to talk about is, are open world games impacting the what are typically story-based games or any kind of franchise that usually is really story-centric. So I wanted to get an idea, number one, of what is it that brought this topic to your mind? You know, maybe there's a specific game that does it well or does it horribly. And just give us some insight into where this topic idea came from and what games jump out at you.
Okay, so as we were talking about like all the games that had released and 2015 and the ones that were coming in 2016, and I was staring at like this list of games, and the, you know, with Mass Effect coming, and then at this time we were talking about The Witcher a lot, I started looking at franchises and games that generally have very strong, impactful narrative stories and characters, and I felt like a lot of the games that have released so far for this current generation on these new consoles that have been open, I should say, that were part of these franchises, are now becoming these huge open worlds. Like, we know the new Mass Effect is supposed to be, like, I don't even know if you can say open world, open space, open universe. The Witcher 3 is probably, like, 20 times bigger than The Witcher 2. Far Cry, those have always been open world games, and they're a little bit less on the narrative, but games like Dragon Age, Metal Gear Solid were more, a little bit more linear, smaller worlds, smaller areas to explore, especially if you play Dragon Age 2, which just kept repeating itself over and over, but they could focus on a story. You were kind of going from point A to point B to point C. There was a plot that was playing out. It was unfolding at a quicker pace with less distraction. As I've played games like Dragon Age Inquisition, as I've played Metal Gear Solid 5, I did not play it all the way through, but I played enough to have a valid opinion. And then The Witcher 3, three humongous games.
Yeah.
Walked away from all three of those. I'm just mentioning those, and my concern came from Mass Effect, the new one, going, while I enjoyed the story that's told in Dragon Age, while I enjoyed the story that was told in The Witcher 3, and while I didn't enjoy what I had saw from Metal Gear Solid 5 so far, I felt like every one of them, because of the open world, were suffering from having that story that I'm used to from those franchises. Because I feel like the open world kind of takes away from it. It distracts you. It doesn't allow you to go through it. And you could say, well, Dirk, just play the story missions. Honestly, those games aren't set up that way.
No, like,
if you were just to play the story missions in The Witcher 3 or in Dragon Age or whatever you're playing, you would end up being under level to go any further. And so that was where this came from, and this is where I wanted to discuss, especially about Metal Gear Solid 5, a game that you finished.
Right.
I couldn't get into it because of the openness of the world and the fact that I felt like the story was so disjointed, whereas when I played Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, 3, and 4, I didn't get that. They were more linear. They went from place to place, from story segment to story segment, and I didn't have that issue that I had with 5. So what are your thoughts?
So when I think of open world games, the three that come to mind from, you know, that I've played this past year would be Witcher 3, of course, Far Cry 4, which I finally dove into. I know it's a 2014 game. And also, I'm blanking out on the third one I was going to mention. Witcher 3, Far Cry 4. I was not going to mention Metal Gear Solid 5 as one of those. Oh, Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
Oh, yeah.
The reason I think of those as open world games is because they literally are that. I mean, although you have hub areas you can go to, you know, Assassin's Creed Syndicate has the train headquarters, and, you know, Far Cry 4, you kind of develop a few bases here and there. But for the most part, what between missions, everywhere you're going, you are literally wandering the map, or perhaps fast traveling once you unlock fast travel in each of those. What I like about that is you can, if you want, just explore, find collectibles, you know, finish other little side missions, or just create your own little chaos, you know, create your own little activity. With something like Metal Gear Solid 5, I mean, technically, you can you can pick a mission, go out there, and then wander and create your own chaos. But for the most part, anytime you're out in the world, you're there for a reason. You have picked your side mission or your main mission, and you're going to accomplish it. Many of those are repeatable, and you can approach them a different way. You can land at a different spot. Technically, you can pick anywhere to land, even if it's super far away, and then travel there. But why would you? Because the world itself, although, yes, technically it's open and you can get in a car or get on your horse and go most directions. There's a couple, you know, different areas in that game. It's not really designed to be a game where you do that, where you get into your vehicle or onto your mount and then travel that distance and then find things in between. It's designed more to be a game where you jump on your helicopter, you pick your next mission, and then you land at the, you know, the closest safe landing zone, and then you carry out your mission. So Metal Gear Solid 5 is, to me, much more mission-based, and it gives you options. It gives you a ton of options on what to tackle next. You know, do you want to build up your base more? Do you need to get more resources? Do you want to tackle the next main mission? Or do you need to go back and repeat a few missions to get better soldiers for your base? So it's more of an open option game.
Well, I agree with you on that. I do agree with you on that, on how it's set up. But it does have that open world syndrome of, because they're trying to make it so much bigger, not only the world, but the game.
Right.
They're offering you more and more missions that don't really matter. When I say don't really matter, I'm talking compared to a Metal Gear Solid. I believe you played 2 and 3.
I did. I played 1, 2, and 3, yeah. I just didn't play 4.
Literally everything you did in those games mattered, and there was a point. Like, they were driving the story forward.
No, now that's very true. Now, Metal Gear Solid 5 has very impactful moments, especially in the second half of it, and that once you get to that second half of the game, the last third of the game, there are some really incredible moments there, both in terms of the cinematics as well as the story reveals and the twists that they throw at you. Mm-hmm. Some really incredible stuff that they do. But most of my time spent in that game, I don't know how much time, probably in the 30 to 40 hour range is what I plugged into that game, quite a bit. Most of that time was spent doing nothing related to the overall story. I was just having fun playing the game that they made.
Yeah.
So in terms of answering this question, did this open world approach, or I guess you could call it more of a open-ended, you know, pick which missions you want to tackle approach, did it impact the story of Metal Gear Solid? I would say absolutely yes, it did. What about for a game like Witcher or Far Cry 4? In my opinion, and this is kind of weird, I guess, but I don't think it did. In fact, I think the open world in some games support the story. The thing about The Witcher 3 that I like so much is that I feel like we're just being told a small slice of a whole bunch of other things that are happening across this land. You know, this battle that's happening, this country that's now lost its identity, and there's two neighboring countries on either side of it that are fighting for control of it, while internally there's, you know, groups of rebels trying to restore the country to its former glory. And you are, this whole time, this basically sword for hire who has a personal mission that he's on. And the open world part feeds into that for me. As I experienced Geralt's story and you know, grew to like him and many other characters as characters, to me, the open world helped to enhance that. And I totally understand for some the size of the world itself and the distractions in every direction, how it could deter from it. I felt so engrossed in that world, whether I was going to explore a question mark under the water, probably a treasure chest, or whether I was heading to the next main mission and had to make a big decision about somebody or something. So to me, the open world can impact the story in a positive way. So I would throw The Witcher 3, and I'm a little biased. I absolutely love that game. I would throw that under the list of games that do the open world right. It's a world that makes you care even more about the story, in my opinion.
I think both Dragon Age and The Witcher 3 do something similar. And that's, they give you side quests, and they do get you in this world, the entire world. Forget just the main plot and all that. And they say, I want you to care about everything that's happening in here. And I don't knock that, and I don't say that's a bad thing. What I am getting at is, I think because they're doing that, they tell thinner stories as their overall plot. And it's also, you're constantly getting sidetracked that it takes away from telling that narrative story. It's almost like, and this is just me probably, but this is how I feel about it. It's almost like if you're watching like this really good movie or good show, but commercials keep popping in like every 5 seconds.
Okay.
And saying, well, all right, well, we'll get to this part of the story after you go through this 30-second commercial. And that's what I felt like with Dragon Age and The Witcher. And it's not that I didn't care about the side missions or anything like that. Of course I did. The Witcher did them amazing, and so did Dragon Age. They both have side quests that I cared about. They both are really good at that. But they didn't have those twisting plots and stories that, especially when I think of Dragon Age, I think of Dragon Age Origins. And I just remember in the multiple times that I played Origins, I'm not going to say that the overall story was great. The story was pretty simplistic. Demons are coming. What are we going to do to stop them? Because they're going to destroy everything, right? That's a simple story.
Right.
It's how they told it, all the twists, all the characters. They're really, in The Witcher's the same way, they're really character-driven stories. And if they don't have characters that you care about, like if they don't have protagonists or antagonists that you care about, then they impact the overall story greatly. Combined with these huge open worlds that have side quests left and right, just distractions that you have left and right, for me personally, it took away from those games.
Okay.
Like, I enjoyed The Witcher 2's story way more than I enjoyed The Witcher 3's. And that's not to say The Witcher 3's was terrible.
Right.
Part of the major problem is the fact that there was no antagonist. Not a real antagonist that I cared about. Like, there wasn't like, oh, this person's out to get Geralt. And you know, and that was kind of what they did in The Witcher 2, is they had this whole plot set up where Geralt had to basically set himself free. And he had to find out why this certain individual did something terrible to set him up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And they didn't have that in The Witcher 3. And Dragon Age, the same thing. Inquisition had a good story, and by the time I got to the end of it, the little twist that they threw on it, I freaking loved it. Mm. But I was like, where were all these other twists that you did in Origins? And where was all that interesting stuff that drove me to get through the story? And it wasn't really there. And my thinking was, I'm seeing it so much more common now in all these open world games. And I think a lot of it isn't always just the storytelling. While I do think some of it's gone a little bit downhill, I think it's just the way they distract you and they pull you away from what you're driving at and what you're trying to get through. But that's just my take.
And I think that's a valid point. I think more and more games, especially from larger developers, and if they have a big enough budget, more and more games, of course, are going to that open world. I mean, we hear that more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this open world action RPG, open world first-person shooter, open world adventure, whatever, you know, description they decide to use. Open world's becoming more and more common. And that's, to me, that can be a good thing, but I think you make a good point that when done in a way that you provide so many options and yet you still want the player to care about this main story, that you have to do a certain So it's like if you got this whole table full of options in front of you, you have to pick this one option to continue this story that we have deemed most important, and yet you've got all these other options. Mm-hmm. Of course, everyone's going to experience it differently. So for me, the Witcher 3 experience was incredibly impactful throughout. I do think it had a few pacing issues here and there, but that was even when I was just doing mainline story quests. I hadn't gotten totally distracted with the side quests yet. I just thought the storytelling and the dialogue started to get a little bit slow at certain points.
Yeah.
When I did the side quests in a game like Witcher 3 or even Far Cry 4, I really liked the way that it built up in my mind the world, the lore, the things that were going on around me, and the whole purpose of why I was doing what I was doing. So because I had bought into those worlds to a certain point, I don't feel like it was a negative impact for me. But here's the thing. How much more would I have enjoyed those stories if they hadn't had that open world design? You know, if they hadn't had me running and taking over fortresses or hunting down monsters for this little village of, you know, who knows who they are, would I have liked those stories even more? So now that I'm thinking about it in those terms, maybe. You know, maybe the open world is affecting story more than I realize. And so when I think about a really strong, you know, linear narrative story, like for instance, the Uncharted games, they take you right from moment to moment, yeah, set piece to set piece. They get you from point A to point B in those games. And they don't, I mean, you might be able to approach certain firefights or certain, you know, areas a little differently, but for the most part, you know where you're going. The game's not letting you pick, I'm going to go to this city now, you know, and climb up these buildings. No, you're going to go from here to here, and that's where it's going to be. So I can see your point that maybe the impact of some of these stories, and man, they're getting good. Some of these stories are so good. The twists that they have, the writing, mm-hmm, the way that the dialogue has improved over the years. Go back and play some of these older games from 10, 15, 20 years ago and tell me that the dialogue and in some cases the voice acting hasn't gone way better. I mean, there are certain games that still hold up great, like your Metal Gear Solid for the original PS1. But there are others, whether it was a translation issue or just poor writing in general.
Yeah.
Like I've been playing back through Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and I'm sorry for those of you who hold that up as one of the best games ever. The writing in that game and the translation in the game, it's awful.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrible. And it made me laugh out loud several times. It takes itself super seriously, and it's awful. And some of the voice actors should not be doing voice acting ever again. I hope they haven't done anything since then.
Well, that's so, kind of like Resident Evil for me.
And I mean, all that to say, it's a long way of kind of saying, I agree with you to a certain extent, although I don't think I'll ever really know, you know, what potentially could a game have meant to me in terms of its story and its characters if it didn't have those open world options. But as far as I'm looking at it, some of them, I like that experience of having the option to pursue the next storyline or to just dig in deeper to, I guess you could call it like the setting. Like you're digging more into the background of, you know, the backdrop of what the main story is living in. So, you know, understanding the conflict between the countries a little bit more in the Witcher world.
Yeah.
Or understanding, you know, maybe a little more of the history of the Golden Path in Far Cry 4 before you go to the next story mission and make a decision on who to support and what path to pursue. You know, you unlock some of those audio logs, you do a couple extra missions, you learn more about your parents, and it really does, it can add to your understanding of that world and why you're doing what you're doing. So I think when done right, it can help the story, but in general, it really can detract from it. I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think some games are doing it just fine. I think Dragon Age did okay. I didn't like Metal Gear Solid 5, like I said. I think The Witcher 3, I mean, it's only because I'm comparing it to The Witcher 2. I think The Witcher 2 did the story better than The Witcher 3, but I think The Witcher 3 did everything else better, which makes it, the overall package, a better game. Like, if somebody was to come up to me and say, which do you like better, The Witcher 2 or 3? I'm going to say 3.
Yeah.
So, and the one thing that I felt like 3 did mess up with that kind of hurt from a story standpoint and as far as a main story, because their side quests actually have great stories, is I really, really wanted a an overarching story with something haunting him, something driving him, not just, you know, a missing girl that he cared about. Anyways, I know that was a complaint from several gamers, and the expansions are actually planning to have that corrected.
A key antagonist, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I have to throw in my thought on Witcher 2 versus Witcher 3, just because it was brought up. I do think Witcher 2 is a great game. It's free. You know what? It might not be free anymore. It was free for you Xbox owners on your 360, and it's backwards compatible if you have Xbox One. So I hope you grabbed it.
Please tell me you downloaded it on your Xbox One.
I already owned it on the 360.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you got
that. It is a great linear action RPG. It's challenging. The combat isn't perfect. If you liked the combat in 3 at all, then 2 is just a slightly lesser version of that. It's not quite as good, but it's the same basic mechanics, the same basic strategies. Anyway, Witcher 2 is very good, and it does have some really key moments where you have to make big decisions, and it's got a few emotional spots here and there as well. I didn't think the story in 2 was anywhere near as good as 3. I did like some of the turns that happened. I did like a few, especially towards the end, you know, a few things are revealed and kind of uncovered, but I don't remember caring about a ton in that story anywhere close to the way I cared about it in Witcher 3. And I think, I don't know if that's a personal preference thing.
Or Probably because...
Or if it's because, like I said earlier, honestly, that open world aspect of Witcher 3 made me care about what was happening in the main storyline missions that much more. There are also moments in The Witcher 3 that legitimately stick with me on an emotional level. The whole Red Baron and the... you know, the witches out in the woods, like that whole section of the game was so impactful. And there are some major things that happen there, some major decisions, the way things can possibly play out. It's a very heavy, very surprising part of that game. And that's part of the main story. Like, you can't get past that part without doing that. So that's not a side quest. That's part of the main storyline. And then, of course, there's a key battle, I would say, about somewhere between a half and two thirds of the way through the game, where you're defending a certain area. I won't go too much into detail, but there's a very key battle where finally they take the villain from being kind of just this, you know, Sauron from the Lord of the Rings type of a bad guy into someone with a little more personality, a little more background.
Mm-hmm.
Not perfect. He's not a great antagonist. He's not fun to see on the screen necessarily, but all of a sudden you see there's a little more of a personal aspect to who he is and what he's doing. So, in my opinion, I thought Witcher 3 was the superior game, not just in the fact that it's more fun to play and bigger. I did think the story was a little better, personally.
No, I do think it's okay that you're wrong. and we'll accept your wrongness.
Okay.
And you'll just need to sit in it for a while.
That's fair. Well, if any of you have thoughts on this, how are open world games impacting the narrative in games? I mean, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do you want to see more or less open world? Do you like to see developers pursue much more of a focused linear experience? Or do you find yourself leaning towards, you know, give me a whole bunch of options and let me pick when I go through those main missions? You know, what's your preference? And, you know, do you think there's a negative impact there potentially?
I would really love to see, and I'd love to see it in Mass Effect. I'd love to see a huge open world / universe, since we're talking about Mass Effect right now, that has a overarching story that's intriguing, has mystery, has something that's driving me to solve and figure it all out. That's very important to me. And I think having side missions that matter are extremely important, just like a good cast of characters, supporting characters and villains. But what I'd like to see less of, and this would be for The Witchers, the Dragon Ages, the Far Cries, all these games, is I'd like to see less of the filler, just do this to get experience quests. Like, oh, hey, we're about ready to, you know, be destroyed by an alien race, but can you go take this diamond necklace to my long lost wife? Oh, okay, I'll go do that real quick. I mean, I'm not worried about the universe dying here. Let me just do... You know, that's the stuff that I see in these games that I'm like, really? I'm doing this right now? That's what I would like to see taken out. Like, I would like for somebody to be like, we're going to make a game that's going to be loaded with content, but it's only going to be content that's relevant to what you're doing. So if it's not relevant, we're not going to just put it in there just to put it in there and say, well, we have 5,000 missions that you can complete, and we have 900 hours of gameplay. Like, that's a selling point for a lot of these people, and that's why they put them in there. A lot of it is filler, so they can say, you can play The Witcher 3 for 200 hours. You know, I'm not saying that's what they were doing, but that is what a lot of consumers want to hear. They want to hear that I can play this game for 200 hours and get new content.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's going to be probably a mainstay as far as drawbacks go with open world, is that if you, the player, choose to do things, quote unquote, out of order or out of sync with, you know, what's happening in the mainline story, it's kind of your call. So, like, if you're at a point in the game where this devastating thing is affecting the entire land, and you walk up to a shop owner because you have to load up on stuff, and he's just talking to you like a regular dude working his shop that day, if you really think about it, you're like, why isn't he reacting to the flames that were above us just a minute ago? You know what I mean? Like, there are those moments that pull you out of the fact that this is an engrossing story and remind you that, hey, you're playing a video game.
Yeah.
That's what you're playing. So I think with open world comes pros and cons. There's a lot of it's just stuff that we're used to now as gamers. You know, we've totally adjusted. But I see what you're saying. You know, in order to stay completely lost in a good way in those worlds, I wonder if there's going to be, you know, new ways to keep us from being jolted out of it, you know, with the real video game moment when a character or a moment just is all way out of place.
You know, and real quick, I know we're winding down here, but the game that I want to say got it right when it came, for me personally, when it came to like side quests and stuff like that, was Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Let me say this. The overarching story and the main plot wasn't as intriguing as, for me personally, for a Dragon Age, Inquisition, or even The Witcher 3. I think those games both did what they were trying to do better. What I liked about Assassin's Creed is a lot of the side quests and side stuff you could do was fun, and it was short, and it was always just on the way. Like, what I mean by that is I wouldn't go to somebody and talk to them, and then they would tell me to go 9,000 miles across the country to go get something or kill somebody and then come back to them.
Yeah.
Syndicate, you would just walk up to a warehouse, and then you would go do something in that warehouse, and that would complete the mission. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I think that was very purposeful by
the
Ubisoft team, and that's one of the things that made it such an improvement over... other recent entries.
I would love to see stuff like that where it's like you walk up and you get this side mission and you're already there or you're already doing something right there. You don't have to go 9,000 miles away or something like that.
Yeah, no, good points. And again, I'd be interested to hear from any of you who are listening who have a thought on open world games and story and what's your take on it. So feel free to share that with us, whether you head over to the website or just want to send us an email. You can do that at fathersofthegrind@gmail.com or just head to the website, fathersofthegrind.com. So that just about wraps it up for us. Derek, any final words you want to share with everybody?
I just want to say that I still hate Tim. I think this podcast is garbage.
All right, cool. You're fired. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to talk to you soon. Take care.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?